Deutsche Welle Spotlight on Europe.
Hello from wherever you're listening. Welcome to this week's edition of Spotlight on Europe, the show that brings you highlights of European news. My name is Wanjiko Mwaura from our studios in Bonn, Germany. On today's lineup, is Austria backing a trend and becoming the ashtray of Europe?
Ich sehe als Wirt
oder as the host or owner, I support this right that I can decide whether it's this type of cafe or that type. And then nobody can come in and find it's too smoky or that they don't like it.
And will the French and US presidents see eye to eye on Syria? We'll hear the answer to that and more, so stay tuned. French President Emmanuel Macron has compared political divisions in Europe to a civil war. He's warned against growing illiberalism on the continent and urged the EU not to become a generation of sleepwalkers. Helen Sini has the details and this roundup of European news.
Emmanuel Macron gave an impassioned speech to the European Parliament, warning of the divisions between democracy and authoritarianism in Europe. He called for the defence of European liberal democracy and criticised politicians who scapegoated migrants. That may have been a veiled reference to Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán. He recently won re-election following a campaign that stoked voters' fears of immigration. The EU, Macron said, needed to be united against the emergence of nationalist authoritarian traits of the past. The French leader also set out his vision for sweeping EU reforms. And he called on other EU leaders to follow his example by holding a public dialogue on Europe's future. The German government has committed to accepting refugees under a programme to resettle people considered particularly vulnerable. The country will accept 10,000 refugees from North Africa and the Middle East. It's part of the EU's latest resettlement programme, which aims to provide a legal, direct and safe route to Europe for those in need of protection. At least 50,000 refugees from crisis areas are to be brought into the EU by 2019. Other member states have already agreed to resettle 40,000, meaning that the programme's goal has been achieved and may even be exceeded. Brussels will be supporting host countries by providing 500 million euros to fund the programme. Since the height of migrant arrivals in Europe in 2015, Germany has seen over 1 million people apply for asylum in the country. The largest groups come from Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq and Eritrea. Facebook is to begin rolling out new privacy policies worldwide, starting immediately with changes in Europe. The social media giant needs to comply with the EU's new data privacy law, which comes into effect next month. That new law will allow European regulators to fine companies for collecting or using personal data without users' consent. Failure to do so could result in fines of up to 4% of global annual revenue. People will also have the right to know what information a company has gathered and demand it to be deleted. In future, Facebook users in Europe will be asked to make choices about ads they receive on the site. Adults will be able to opt in or out of facial recognition technology, and it won't be allowed for anyone under the age of 18. Users will also review whether to share their religious and political beliefs, as well as their sexual orientation and relationship status. In Romania, prosecutors have formally indicted a former president for crimes against humanity. Ion Iliescu, who's 88, assumed office during the violent 1989 revolution against the communist regime led by Nicolae Ceaușescu. More than 1,100 people died in the uprising, the vast majority after Ceaușescu had been ousted and executed and Iliescu had taken power. Prosecutors say Iliescu failed to prevent situations which led to people being needlessly killed. The investigation into the revolution has been one of the longest and most controversial in Romania's history. It's been halted and reopened several times. A former deputy prime minister is also set to be prosecuted. The UK has announced plans to ban the sale of plastic cotton buds, straws and drink stirrers. The move is part of a push to tackle global marine pollution. Prime Minister Theresa May said her government will start consultations on the issue later this year, and a ban could be introduced as early as next year. It's estimated that there are 150 million tonnes of plastic in the world's oceans, and a recent study found that 8.5 billion plastic straws are thrown away in Britain every year. The government will also commit £61 million for research and to improve waste management in developing countries.
Helen Sini with the news. France is still making headlines as the country's president, Emmanuel Macron, heads to Washington next week for talks with his US counterpart, Donald Trump. His trip comes at a time fraught with transatlantic differences over issues ranging from Iran to trade. Syria is also likely to top the agenda following the joint strikes by the US, France and Britain against suspected chemical weapon sites. From Paris, Lisa Bryant looks at what's at stake and the unlikely rapport between one of the world's oldest power couples.
After the fireworks and military parade laid out for Donald Trump during last year's Bastille Day festivities in Paris, it's now the U.S. leader's turn to give President Emmanuel Macron the red carpet treatment. Instead of an Eiffel Tower restaurant, the two presidents and their spouses will dine at another historic landmark, Mount Vernon, home to America's first president, George Washington. Macron will also receive a 21-gun salute and a chance to address the U.S. Congress. While British Prime Minister Theresa May met with Trump in Washington last year, Macron's is the first full state visit accorded to a European leader, a surprising departure given Britain's traditional special status for the U.S. and Germany's longtime role as chief European power. Who would have thought just a year ago that France's youngest president and America's oldest one could ever get along?
There is obviously an alpha male situation there where, you know, to talk to Donald Trump, you have to be both, in a way, respectful, flattering, but stand your ground. And it seems that so far Macron has managed to do that.
Today, historian and U.S. specialist Nicole Bacharan says the relationship between the two men is about as good as it can be. Macron is widely seen as Trump's go-to European leader.
They talk to each other frequently. It's obvious that Macron tries to keep the United States within the circle of countries and leaders who can work together.
And had a tremendous victory. All over the world, they're talking about it.
It wasn't always so good. During their first face-to-face encounter last year, Macron bypassed Trump to greet German Chancellor Angela Merkel at a NATO meeting. Then came the famous handshake between the two men, which looked more like a wrestling match. In many ways, Trump and Macron could not be more different. Trump is a serial TV news watcher. Macron is a workaholic. Macron warns against rising populism in Europe, of the kind Trump's critics accuse the U.S. leader of embracing. Macron loves art. Trump loves the art of the deal. But both are political outsiders who have upended politics as usual in their countries when they came to power. And says Manuel Lafont-Rapnouille, Paris office head of the European Council on Foreign Relations, Macron has worked hard to build a constructive rapport with his U.S. counterpart.
Obviously, he has not shied away from stating the differences that they have on climate, on Jerusalem, on the Iran nuclear deal and a few others, but Macron has always tried first to keep a good relation with Trump.
Des frappes ciblées ont été effectuées sur le régime syrien mené par les États-Unis, la France et le Royaume-Uni.
But there are other areas where France and the U.S. work together, especially militarily, in the Sahel and in Syria. Last week, the two countries, along with Britain, launched missile attacks against suspected Syrian chemical weapons sites following an alleged poison gas attack by Damascus on a former rebel-held town.
Il y a 10 jours, le président Trump disait les États-Unis d'Amérique ont vocation à se désengager de la Syrie.
During a TV interview, President Macron claimed he had persuaded Donald Trump to remain in Syria for the longer term and to agree to limited strikes. Soon after, he appeared to recast those remarks after the White House denied them. France and the U.S. were on the same page, he said. They had never considered staying in Syria for the long haul. But Macron and other European leaders do want to find a political solution to this Syria conflict. And analyst Lafont Rapnoy believes that subject will rank high in discussions with Trump.
So Macron is going to go to Washington saying, OK, first, please stop saying you want to go out, because this is sending exactly the wrong signal. It's like giving a free pass to Assad, to the Iranians, and et cetera.
The ideas Macron has outlined for resolving the Syrian crisis include engaging actors like Iran, the nemesis of the Trump administration. Syria analyst Noah Bonzi of the International Crisis Group notes Trump, by contrast, appears largely focused on defeating ISIS and getting out. Besides, he says, the conditions aren't there for peace.
The Syrian regime is gaining militarily. It doesn't have any interest in serious negotiation at the national level. I mean, there isn't a pathway right now to a sustainable political resolution in Syria.
Analysts say Macron will face a tough time on other issues as well, like persuading Trump not to back out of the Iran nuclear deal. The French leader also needs to consider his political base. Trump is highly unpopular in France. But historian Bachahon believes Macron's ability to talk frankly with Trump and work to keep the U.S. as a reliable transatlantic partner is key. He has almost nothing to lose, she says, and everything to win. Lisa Bryant, DW, Paris.
That song by Asta Aweke, a popular Ethiopian singer. Now, speaking about Ethiopia, Sufa Mengesha Forest Park, located about 20 kilometers west of the capital Addis Ababa, is the oldest indigenous forest in Africa. Now, imagine if someone was to cut down these naturally growing trees. Well, that's what recently happened here in Europe, Poland specifically, after the country's decision to beef up logging on the continent's oldest forest, the Białowieża Forest. However, Europe's highest court ruled during the week that Poland's resolution is in breach of European Union law. And the Białowieża Forest, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, has been described as one of the best preserved natural forests in Europe, characterized by large quantities of ancient trees and dead wood. My colleague Keith Walker spoke to DW's Poland correspondent Julian Berner, who started by pointing out it's not the first time Poland has been ordered to stop logging in the forest. Take a listen.
Now, this has been going on for the past 2.5 years since the nationalist government took office in 2015. Poland has been reprimanded time and again, but the previous environment minister, Jan Szyszko, just refused to accept this and logging went on.
And there's a lot of damage has been done because of this logging, isn't there?
It is staggering. 180,000 trees were cut during this time, and the authorities tripled the logging quotas during this period. And according to statistics compiled by ecological organizations, more than half of the trees were more than 100 years old.
Okay. Now, cutting trees that are over 100 years old, that's just against EU law.
One-fourth of the area, total area on the Polish side of the border, because there is also the Belarusian side, and the Belarusian side is covered by the national park in its entirety. And the ecological changes that happened because of this logging concern the whole forest.
What about financial penalties?
As things stand, there have been no penalties imposed on Poland. I think the decision by the Polish authorities came just in time, although Poland is to bear the cost of European Court of Justice proceedings, and these are going to be no small sums of money. And of course, there's always the threat that some kind of financial sanctions might be imposed in the future if logging were resumed on this scale at any time.
This is the latest in a string of battles between Poland and the EU.
Well, the Polish nationalist government seems intent on completely transforming Poland into its own image, into a vision of a country which is guided by the well-being of the nation, however you define it. And for this reason, the government has been basically dynamiting everything that was there before, whether it concerns the way the legal system was organized, whether it concerns the education system, whether it concerns the independence of public media. All this has been tampered with, and although there has been criticism of every step coming from Europe, the United States, the Polish government just keeps on saying that it's an internal matter, that it's ready to discuss with the European Union, but it is really not doing anything to undo all those changes. It cannot at this stage completely rewrite the constitution the way it has happened in Hungary, because the ruling Law and Justice Party does not enjoy a constitutional majority, but it is in a position to do anything else. And right now, Poles are living in a country where there are no independent public media. Courts already are subjected to the Justice Ministry, and there are plenty of other examples of violations of democracy. The dividing lines between executive, parliamentary and judicial powers are so blurred now that it's very difficult to say whether or not the country can still be called democratic.
That was DW's Poland correspondent Julian Berner speaking to my colleague Keith Walker. You're still listening to Spotlight on Europe. This musical interlude coming up is the song Nya Nairobi, sung by Makadem, a Kenyan artist. He sings in Doluo, an Ilotic language spoken by about 4 million people in East Africa. And the song is in praise of the daughters of Nairobi. Enjoy. Ingo jalego Heranie male kudacha Jame kichana yo Lando is maheriga Atoti kitoyaga Lando vivuti
Takakuma bete Lando in maheri yawa
Lando is maheriga
Nanarobi city kao chunya engao malo
Lando vivuti Thank you. Smoking is harmful to your health. This is a warning often seen on cigarette packets. And according to World Health Organization, tobacco kills more than 7 million people each year. And in many countries like Germany, anti-smoking laws have reduced the number of places in which smoking is allowed. But in Austria, the new conservative coalition recently overturned a law banning smoking in all cafes, bars and restaurants. Instead, it wants the cafe owners to decide whether customers can light up. Now, more than 500,000 Austrians have signed a petition titled Don't Smoke. It demands that the government abandon plans to liberalize smoking laws. DW's Kerry Skyring reports.
A typical Viennese cafe has waiters in suits, dark wood furniture, newspapers, good coffee, and cigarette smoke. Well, not all of them, but even in those with non-smoking areas, including this one, customers often walk through the smoke zone to get to the non-smoking one. And the doors to that zone are propped open, so the waiters can come and go with ease. The smoke, too. Peter Tapler is from Innenraum Analytik, an air quality consultancy, and he's been sitting in cafes like this one, measuring the number of fine particles or pollution in the atmosphere.
On average, in the non-smoking areas, we have four times the pollution to be found on a busy street intersection. It can be up to 10 times. If anyone finds that acceptable and feels fine with it, then of course they can use those areas. But if you don't like it, then you have to find another cafe.
Last year, the Austrian government passed a law which would have banned all smoking in cafes, restaurants and bars. But the new conservative government has come to power and promptly abolished that law before it could take effect. So the old rules apply. Smoking and non-smoking zones and very small establishments able to decide whether to be all smoking or no smoking. Trouble is those laws are honoured more in the breach than the observance.
In two-thirds of those investigated, the doors were either open or didn't even exist. And even when the doors are closed, in almost every case, there's an overflow of smoke and fine particles from the smoking area into the non-smoking area.
International visitors to Austria, especially from the United States or the UK, often comment on the number of smokers in public places. Around a quarter of the population lights up at least once a day. That makes it among the smokiest four or five countries in Europe, behind Bulgaria, Greece and Hungary. And according to an EU survey, Austrian women are Europe's top smokers. Professor Paul Savelda has coined the term the ashtray of Europe to describe his country. He's the president of Austrian Cancer Aid and one of the organisers of the Don't Smoke petition.
We know that in Austria, every year 13,000 people die as a consequence of smoking. We know that young people begin to smoke, if they have had the opportunity, in cafes and bars. These are all factors.
This suburban cafe has many classic Viennese features. Marble-top tables, Art Deco mirrors, and ceilings of a familiar yellowish brown, wrought only by many decades of cigarette smoke. Proprietor Anna Karnicha says she's in favour of government plans allowing her to decide the smoking rules.
As the host or owner, I support this right that I can decide whether it's this type of cafe or that type. And then nobody can come in and find it's too smoky or that they don't like it. That's a matter of taste.
But air quality consultant Peter Tapler says cafe owners have nothing to fear from a general smoking ban, as demanded by the Don't Smoke petition.
I understand the concerns, but other countries show that these concerns are not justified. Certainly there are some establishments that will have fewer visitors and others that will have more, because non-smokers will find a smoke-free cafe more attractive and will want to go in.
Regular customer Mariana is pleased the new government is more smoker-friendly than the last.
I come to a cafe where they're still smoking, because it's pleasant when I'm having a coffee. For me, a smoking ban would be a catastrophe.
A catastrophe for a smoker, perhaps, but a smoking gun for the government. More than 500,000 signatures on the Don't Smoke petition means Parliament is now required to debate smoking laws. It also puts politicians under pressure to hold a referendum, one that could see the government defeated on one of its very first initiatives. Kerry Skyring, DW, Vienna.
Now to Greece, where children are facing a unique challenge, unlike the rest of their European counterparts. Children in Greece have some of the worst dental health in Europe, and this is because money issues have led to fewer trips to the dentist and led about 70% of Greek dental problems untreated for at least a year. Anthe Karasava reports from Athens.
Dentists in Greece say the trend is not one to smile about. While conclusive data has yet to be compiled, orders for dentures here are surging. And the reason dentists explain is simple. They're cheaper, much cheaper than dental implants, around 500 euros for full-fitted dentures, twice as much for a single-tooth prosthetic. With most Greek adults having at least one to two teeth missing due to an accident, tooth decay, gum disease, or dental fractures, that's a lot of money to dish out. Especially when salaries here have been slashed by 30%, when one in five Greeks are out of a job, and nearly all state insurance funds have stopped picking up the tab on dental bills since 2011, the height of the Greek financial crisis. So what are Greeks doing for smile restoration? Nothing. Most adults are just letting their teeth rot, watching them decay one after the other, before resorting to full or partial dentures. Business has dropped so much for dentists here that Greece's Dental Association counts a 45% decline in recent years, a find producing Greeks with the poorest bill of health in Europe as far as oral hygiene is concerned. Indeed, in few places are the wounds of Greece's eight-year financial depression more evident than in the mouths of its people. If Greeks used to go to the dentist once a year, now they're going once every 5 years. But the problem, dentists tell me, is getting worse. With little money to spare, Greek households have increased consumption of what's commonly known here as the food of the poor, sugar, or else low-cost sugary foods and snacks, a trend further exacerbating the state of the nation's teeth and general health. Poor oral health has been linked to chronic illness, such as cardiovascular disease and diabetes. Problem teeth can also prevent children and adults from getting enough sleep and eating properly, affecting in turn concentration in the classroom and production at work. In 2014, and as the first glimmer of a potential Greek recovery emerged, state officials promised to inject 64 million euros into state insurance coffers to aid oral hygiene. The pledge, though, was quickly repealed as the economy swooned and fears of a fresh bankruptcy surged anew. Anthe Karasava, DW, Athens.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of Spotlight on Europe. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We would love to connect with you on our Facebook page, DW Africa, or you can also write to us an email via feedback.africa@dw.com. Thanks to the rest of the team, Helen Sini, our technician Gerd Georgi, and thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another edition of Spotlight on Europe. My name is Wanjiko Maura, and from all of us here at DW, have a wonderful time. She dey do the dirty dance, Valentino she dey wear, you know. She call me funk, Mr. Flex, you know. Everything I want she give me. She tell me every day she wanna see me, yo.